Mitch Free has spent most of his career solving problems, eliminating inefficiencies, not listening to conventional thinking. Mitch founded and he serves as the president and CEO of MFG. Through his vision and creativity and persistence, Mitch has grown MFG to a company that has become the platform where you bring the world's manufacturing economy does business. Mitch, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me. You're absolutely right. MFG.com is the world's manufacturing platform.
Hello. So MFG, take us there. What is MFG?
Well, MFG stands for, it's MFG.com is actually the name of the business, and MFG stands for manufacturing, just like you, it's just as simple as it sounds. It's good you asked that because people always think that stands for Mitch Free Group or some other some other short, but really it's just manufacturing.
Right. And so what does MFG do? What's your vision? What's your expertise? How do you make money, Mitch?
Absolutely. It's all about making money, right? It's all about finding an inefficiency or some value proposition and leveraging it. And with MFG, we bring together buyers of things that are manufactured, whether it be components that go into cars or boats or cell phones or textiles, clothing and apparel. If people have a drawing, an engineering drawing, they need to find a manufacturer. Then they'll upload they'll create a request for quote, upload the drawings. It'll match to manufacturers. And the manufacturers will collaborate with them online, give them pricing quotes, and ultimately they'll do a deal.
Wow! And so, looking at your background, it was interesting. You have 250 employees. You're in Europe. You're in China.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? 3 different continents, 12 languages. Right. You got your start. You started your career in engineering school. And that lasted 6 weeks. You went to a trade school. What happened there?
That's right. Yeah, it started. I was a guy as a teenager. I loved my car and fixing my car. And I always thought I wanted to be a mechanical engineer. So I went to engineering school. And after about 6 weeks, I realized it just wasn't for me. I didn't have the discipline and I had never really learned to study. School had always come really easy for me. So I went ahead and quit before they threw me out and started looking around at what to do next. And I knew I liked making things, so I went to a trade school and was looking for a program, and I went into a program that was called machine shop, I didn't really know what that is, but it looked kind of cool, and found that I really enjoyed taking steel or aluminum and making precision parts out of it, and that became the beginning of a very interesting career as technology began to really come into the manufacturing sector with robotics and computer numerically controlled machines and I found I had a love for technology as well as making things.
Now that's different. Technology and manufacturing, putting those together. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned something. We met at the Catalyst magazine event, and you mentioned you were interested in how things work and how to make them better.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts on why is that so important to you, and why did that get your attention?
Yeah, I think I think that's the key to business and to entrepreneurship is people that is having an inquisitive mind, right? Wanting to know, how things work, what are the moving parts. And then once you understand the moving parts of any business, any industry, then if you extrapolate that to, okay, how can I make it efficient? How can I make we'll often refer to it as a curve jump. How can I jump from this, linear growth curve that everyone's riding to the whole next thing? It's like Henry Ford when he said, had he asked the market what they wanted, they would have said, a faster horse, because he didn't know a car was possible. And I think that's what entrepreneurship is: people that really, look at an industry, understand it well, understand the moving parts, are inquisitive, and look for that next curve that no one else is seeing.
And that's what Guy Kawasaki was saying. I was reading an interview he did with Tom Peters, as a matter of fact, yesterday. He says, mm-hmm. okay, you're in business, but, you know, you got to jump to the next curve. Mm-hmm. You know, where is that? And that's what you're talking about. So how do you find value? How does an entrepreneur like yourself find that value? What's the process with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the process, one, is understanding that value chain within the industry you're serving, and then, you know, where the biggest pain points are. You got to figure out where it is people are spending excess time or excess money, and that you can do it, you know, and cause them to spend less time or less money, and then extract a portion of that as value for your business.
So you got to find the pain, and where, quantifying the pain. What's it costing them in terms of time and money? How's it impacting their company? I always say that when I'm in talk with clients. I said, so what are you doing? What are your results? And you're digging in deep into the pain, and you have to provide a solution. So you came up with this idea, MFG.
That's right.
And the light went on. You were looking at a LendingTree commercial, and the light went on for you?
That's exactly right. You know, my background was in manufacturing, so I knew a lot of people. I understood the industry well. I was sort of looking for that. No, I'm not really looking for an entrepreneurial idea, but I was one of those guys. I'd love to find something, and I had introduced some folks one was designing products, and the other was a manufacturing company that had capacity, and I introduced them, and I was leaving that meeting. And I heard a commercial for LendingTree.com. It said, request your mortgage and let lenders compete. And that was a eureka moment for me. I said, someone should do that in the manufacturing industry. And why not me?
Wow. And so how did you get started with the idea?
Yeah, so I went home, and over the weekend I started looking up, you know, URLs, registering domain names. And this was in late 1999. And because I had always been a student of technology in addition to manufacturing. I knew enough about software and writing code to do a real hack job. But over the weekend, I actually wrote the first version, and it was pretty cheesy, and it had a flat file database behind it, and it was pretty cheesy. But I put it out there and started letting people know about it, and people just began adopting it. And I started seeing transactions happen on the marketplace, and it was pretty amazing. I mean, I knew I had hit on something once people started using it. And I think the interesting approach is I didn't take, you know, 6 months to design the logic of the system and create product requirement documents. I just took something that was in my head, and I wrote the code and put it out there. And, you know, today I'd be embarrassed if anyone saw it. But it proved the market need very quickly before I went out and spent money on figuring out how to scale it.
See, that's interesting you say that, because I don't know anybody that likes to work on cars and can also write code. So that's different in itself. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
You either have one or two. So I commend you, and it's really an honor and pleasure talking with you today about your business. Okay, so you got – the first thing I learned from what you just said is that you got to take action.
Oh yeah.
Don't think about it and think about it and think about it and analyze it to death. You've got to commit to action and do something about it.
That's exactly it. That's the key to any. I mean, no business got started because someone sat on the sidelines and didn't take action, right?
Right.
And I always say I'd rather have played the game and got my butt kicked than have never played the game. Because
even if you do get
your butt kicked, you learn so much in the process that you come out the other side much more. If you have to go get a job, you come out the other side a much more valuable employee than is when you went in the process. Mm-hmm. So I rationalized to myself, there's really no downside.
Yeah. So what happened is you open up this, you get this website going, you get this business going. You quit your job and the millions and millions of dollars come to you, right? Is that how that works?
No.
It doesn't work like that?
No, it didn't work like that. It was quite the I quit my job, and then I needed to scale.
Hold up. You build this website, and then you quit your job?
Absolutely. And then I needed to scale the business. And I didn't have that much money. I didn't have much money at all. So next thing you know, I'm cashing in my 401k, second mortgage on the house, 8 credit cards. And well, thank God I had taken out that second mortgage before I quit the job. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to get it probably, right? But I started drawing that down. So I really leveraged, you know, everything I could personally. But I believed in the business. I was passionate about it. I saw it working. I knew it just needed, you know, it just needed continual work and focus and development. And then we focused really hard on creating value. MFG.com is a subscription-based service. So the buyers use the service for free, and the suppliers pay an annual subscription fee. And so we would focus really hard on delivering that value, and we would sell a subscription, and we'd buy a chair, and we'd sell a subscription and buy another computer. And we really built the business in lockstep with the market. We didn't go out and try to raise a lot of money, and then it would have created an infrastructure much greater than the market was ready to adopt that. So, right. So I think it's actually a blessing. In my case, it was a blessing to bootstrap. It was very, very hard. But it made me build the business in lockstep with the rate the market was ready to adopt. And that paid off, you know, it paid huge dividends. And it also forces you to listen to the market, to listen to your customers.
Mm-hmm. So what's important? Is it important to go after the money or pursue your passion?
Pursue your passion. Absolutely. Okay. Pursue your passion. If you follow your passion, the money will come.
Okay.
I strongly believe in that. And I'll say, you know, throughout my career, I never took a job for the money. I took a job because I was intrigued. I thought I could learn something. I thought I could learn something that I could parlay in the future. And it absolutely worked out. Now, I'm not saying that's not without you know, risk or that it works out for everyone. But in my case, I wanted to get great experiences and learn things that I found interesting. And I did that. And then, you know, when I heard that LendingTree.com commercial, it was sort of the perfect storm of all these random experiences I had of following things I found interesting coming together at the right moment in time.
Now, how did you meet Jeff? Is it Blazos?
Jeff
Amazon.com.
Bezos.
Yeah. How did that happen? Did they call you up and say, hey, for you. Want to buy your company?
Wasn't like that. Called me up and said, "Hey, can you come to Seattle?" You know, sure. So I went to Seattle. Jeff had learned about the business. He has a personal space project, and it's called Blue Origin, and they're building a suborbital spacecraft. Some of his engineers at the design facility were using MFG.com to get parts made for the spacecraft. And Jeff was over there one day, and they said, "This is just the coolest thing on the internet. We upload our drawings, we collaborate with suppliers, we get quotes, we order the parts show up." And Jeff just found it fascinating. Invited me to come to Seattle. I went. We hung out. We really hit it off. And he said, "Wow, you're building a phenomenal business here that is very hard for anyone to duplicate." Because it's that very unique experience of experiences you had coming together that gave you the insight to do this. And the world's manufacturing economy is huge. It is probably the world's largest economy. If you look around you, everything is manufactured, from everything sitting around you to the clothes on your body. And he said, "This is going to be one of the biggest web businesses ever built, and I'd like to be your partner and help you do it." So we
wrote the check out, and it's done.
We took a little bit more work than that. But it didn't take long, actually, because Jeff, being a consummate entrepreneur himself, he had that instinct when he saw something that was interesting, that he knew was going to work. But he also told me that what he saw in me was that passion for what I was building, and it came right through, and that passion is one of the things that you know you want to invest in, because those passionate people are going to make it work.
Absolutely. So you've got a partnership not only with Jeff but with Fidelity, and you're
That's
doing
right.
exceptionally well in the business.
That's
let's,
right.
Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about with the time that we have left. Now you're not just an entrepreneur. you're running the business, you're the CEO of the company, the president,
yeah.
you're running
right.
things, and you've got a global company. Talk
mm-hmm.
about that. What how did you make that transition, and how
yeah.
can you, what have you done, what did you take away, how have you been able to drive success in your business now, doing business in three continents with 250 employees and 12 languages, and you speak how many languages, Jeff?
I speak English and about 2-year-old French.
Okay.
French like a 2-year-old, but and about two words in Chinese. The manufacturing is a very global ecosystem. That's the way the world works. That companies are sourcing products all over the world for a number of reasons. You know, China is the world's factory. India has a ton of manufacturing capacities increasing. Eastern Europe is Europe's China. Latin America has got some very interesting manufacturing capability in Brazil, and Argentina, and so it's a very interconnected world. So building a marketplace for the global manufacturing industry is quite different than say an eBay or an Amazon that goes into a geography and they want to set up a marketplace in Germany. They probably just replicate their technology, change out the language. And then you've got, shipping within Germany and people speaking German doing business in euros. In our case, we've got, buying organizations maybe coming from Italy and doing business with a supplier in Czechoslovakia. So you've got language issues, you've got currency issues, you've got trade restrictions. It's very complex. But it was very apparent there's no way that I could create a marketplace for the manufacturing industry without it being a global interconnected business. It couldn't be standalone businesses in each country. It actually had to be interconnected. So I rationalized that in any marketplace, the most important thing to have is the buyers. Once you have the buyers, it's pretty easy to get the suppliers to join mm-hmm. because they want to sell to those buyers. And the
okay.
next biggest body of buy is in Europe. So I spent about 6-8 months sort of traveling around Europe, meeting folks, going to trade shows, and just sort of trying to figure out, do I build something from scratch in Europe or do I buy? And then I also had to worry about my technology platform, which I had built as an American in all English, and I didn't think about a lot of things. So I found a company in Geneva, Switzerland that I acquired, and it gave me technology that was very internationalized. It gave me a team in Europe and a nice start of a customer base in Europe. Then I set my sights on China and started spending a lot of time in China. Was fortunate to be able to hire a great general manager there, built up a team. And so we've got a significant presence in Europe, America, and China today. And it's not without challenge running a three-continent round-the-clock business with employees and customers of different cultures is certainly challenging.
So how do you support your employees for greater success in the business of manufacturing or MFG? How do you do that? What's the secret?
Well, I think employees have very basic needs, just like we all humans do. People want to feel like they're part of something. They want to feel like they're accomplishing something when they come in every day that's contributing to something bigger. Not that you're just taking a rock and moving it from one place and then back to the other. That's pretty boring. But so I spend a lot of time making sure people see, the vision of the company and how what we're doing is important and how what we're doing is making the world's economy more efficient, allowing companies to bring
wow.
products to market faster and more profitably, and allowing the suppliers of those companies able to find the right customers so they can make more profits and grow their businesses. And then I make sure each individual, group understands their contribution to that large vision. So people, my employees truly feel like they're doing something that's powerful and meaningful. And then people want to feel like they're doing something meaningful. They want to feel, they want to feel secure. They want to feel like they're valued, and they want the opportunity to advance. if you take care of those basic needs of people, they will do anything, you know, to make the customers happy. And that's the key. You make the customers happy. At the end of the day, they will grow the business, because we don't grow the business. Our customers grow the business for us.
Wow, I like that. It's really good. It's really insightful. So we have a challenging time, and I'll leave it with this. We've got a few minutes left over, but challenging times, not only in American economy, in the world economy. You talk about getting back to basics. Manufacturing is a core business. But you've seen that America's has really become more of a service, maybe sales and service industry. What are your thoughts on that, and what should we do? What can we do as entrepreneurs, as business owners, contribute to the economy? What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I absolutely think, you know, manufacturing is what built America. I mean, it's what created the auto industry. Obviously, it's in trouble now because we lost a little focus. But we created the automobile. We created the airplane. These industrial sectors, what built the wealth in America. If you look at the long-standing wealthy families, it came as a result of manufacturing. And but we got to a point where we just didn't really want to do those jobs anymore. People didn't want to get their hands dirty. People didn't want to work in the environment of making stuff. It was cooler to be an investment banker or an attorney or a doctor, and that's all fine and well, but we all consume so many products as part of our life that we're shipping a lot more money overseas to buy those products than what we generate, and that's why we've got this huge trade deficit. One of the encouraging things I'm seeing, though, in this economy is I think we're seeing some manufacturing start to move back to America, but for a very different reason than maybe one could have anticipated. When you source to a low cost country, whether it be in Eastern Europe or China, you've got a long lead time, and so typically needs to be a really big order. The delivery time, you got maybe 6 weeks in transit once it leaves the factory, et cetera. But you place really big orders. Well, today most of the companies that I'm talking to say, times are so uncertain. We don't know what consumer demand is going to be for our products. So we need to manufacture this in America, close to home, so we can manufacture in quick spurts based on if we see what the economy's doing. Because we don't know what's going to happen at Christmas or in January and February, and we're scared to go out there and place an order for 1 million widgets and be stuck with them. So we'd rather use it in America. Maybe it costs us a little more at the end of the day than going to China, but the risk of winding up with hundreds of thousands of widgets we can't sell, it's just too great. So we're seeing people, the uncertainty actually causing people to move manufacturing back to America.
So, but isn't it expensive to launch a manufacturing company versus somebody offers services? Well, let me ask that question, that follow-up question. What does it take?
Yeah, it is capital intensive, but there are a lot of the companies that supply the equipment, et cetera, are very nimble these days. So there's some pretty interesting deals that I'm seeing, almost modeling the car market or the furniture market went for a while, where they're saying, no money down, no money down, no payments for 12 months. So people are getting really interesting with ways to sort of spur the manufacturing economy and ways to help people get the capital equipment they need, because the manufacturers of the capital equipment see that there's a demand coming back from offshore to have products manufactured locally here in America. But there is a shortage of the small manufacturing companies, because they sort of just dried up and they went away. I mean, over the last 15, 20 years, we decimated our manufacturing economy in America.
Right.
So if people are trying to bring this back, it becomes very tough right now, because a lot of the skilled labor and the factories have gone away. So it is a great opportunity for someone that has the right skill set and the right mindset that wanted to open a, a small manufacturing company, because that demand is certainly building right now, and there's a shortage of people in it.
Yeah, we're just about out of time, but I did want to ask. Okay, so what are the there's a number of questions I want to ask before we're out of time. But what are the skills necessary to launch a manufacturing, and then where are the opportunities to pursue business in manufacturing? So what skills are needed right now? Somebody wants to launch a company like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that you want to have experience in. Right, you don't want to be doing some totally different job one day and then decide the next day you want to open manufacturing. You probably need to go work in it and get your hands dirty somewhere to learn the business and understand the inner workings of it. You know, where is it really interesting to open in manufacturing? I think there are certain sectors in manufacturing that are extremely interesting, sectors that really. Even if it was attractive to offshore them, it can't be, and that's things like the in the medical industry, medical devices. There's such regulation around medical devices and instruments that the requirements are that they must be manufactured in America.
Hmm. Okay.
There are a lot the devices that fall under ITAR, International Trafficking in Arms Regulations, which isn't necessarily arms, but it could relate to national defense. Maybe that's maybe it's security. Maybe it's the type of things at the airport that you see that you walk through that the alarm goes off if you got metal on you. There are certain devices that are related to national security and not just military that can't leave America. So those things are a great opportunity, as well as the gaming industry. Things for lotteries, slot machines, all that, there's regulation that has to be manufactured in America because they don't want that technology going offshore. So if I were opening a manufacturing business today, I would focus on medical, gaming, or something to do with intellectual property related to security and defense. And as sort of the core of the business, and then I would go look at for companies that are having some vulnerability in consumer demand, and talk to them about getting that closer to home, so that we could deliver them, a lot more on demand than having to make big orders to China.
Wow. Okay. Well, Mitch, so thank you so very much for being on our show. Really appreciate it. This is
You're
Mitch
welcome.
Free, President, CEO, founder of MFG, MFG.com, www.mfg.com. Before we leave, I've got to ask you one other question. You made a point, and I just want to reflect on it and get your comments. For those who don't hear the music, the entrepreneur, for those who don't hear the music, the entrepreneur appears insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I said to those who don't hear the music, the dancers appear insane.
Okay, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And as we wrap up, what words of advice or wisdom would you have for entrepreneurs in summary of our conversation that we've had today?
Yeah. We'll use that as a catalyst. For those who don't hear the music, the dancers appear insane. And so often, great entrepreneurs have stories or ideas or concepts that others don't see. And they probably don't have the background or the experiences that you have, and that's why they can't see it. Doesn't mean that your idea isn't brilliant and that you shouldn't do it. So don't let those people discourage you. They just can't hear the music.
Wow. Thank you so very much, Mitch. You got to come back. This is a really, really great interview. We had a great conversation. And let us know what's happening, how we can help and support you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Ken.
All right, then. Thank you. That's Mitch Free, President, CEO, and founder of MFG. This is your host, your sales and profit evangelist, Ken Brown. Don't forget to check out the website, www.bettersalesandprofitsnow. Until next time, be extraordinary, stay profitable, and go make that sale. Take care.